This morning's lesson is found, like the last few mornings, in all three of the first four accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's found in Matthew 20, Mark 10, and Luke 18. Luke 18 has the most complete account of it, so that's the one we'll read. Luke 18, starting in verse 35. But we'll also refer to the other two accounts because they do have a couple of things that's included that are very important. So Luke 18, beginning in verse 35. We are getting very close to that last week of Jesus' life. Of course, that was a very, very busy week, but we're getting pretty close to it. But haven't got there yet. He is getting close to Jerusalem again. Remember, he had just predicted for at least the third recorded time of his death. He told his disciples that he was, you know, going to go to Jerusalem. He would be mocked and scourged and crucified, but that he would rise from the dead the third day. So he had made it very, very clear what was going to happen to him. And so he had just done that, and now he's on his way to Jericho. Luke 18, verse 35. Then it happened, as he was coming near Jericho, that a certain blind man sat by the road begging. And hearing a multitude passing by, he asked what it meant. So they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. Okay, let's kind of stop there because that introduces the account. And the other two accounts in Matthew and Mark include some things that kind of clarify what's going on. But notice first this man, and we'll find out in a minute there were two there, but this is the only one we have named or in particular that does this. This man, two things. He's blind and he's begging. So, I mean, he's, you know, pretty much at the rock bottom. I mean, if you're blind and you're having to beg in the first century, you couldn't get much lower than that. And that's, you know, with being blind, you couldn't do much of anything. So he's simply sitting by the road, you know, waiting for things to happen, for people to come by or whatever. And that, of course, is what's happening. Jesus is on his way to Jericho. Let's go to Mark's account, Mark chapter 10, and then we'll go to Matthew's account and read the introduction there. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. Now they came to Jericho. As he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. Okay? So now we have a little more additional information there in that Mark's account includes that they were coming out of Jericho. So he had obviously been going through, and there are kind of two cities in Jericho. There's kind of an old and a new city, and so apparently he had entered like one part of it and left it, but was then going into the other part, kind of like Purdy and East Purdy, if you've ever been over there and seen that metropolis. There's actually two parts to that huge booming city. And kind of Jericho apparently at that time had like two parts. So that's why in one account we kind of see him entering and the other one kind of leaving. Well, it kind of depends on what part of Jericho you were talking about. And of course, this is almost feast time. You know, it's getting close to Passover. So you've got all of these people. And of course, the closer you get to Jerusalem, the more people there are going to be because they're headed to the feast. They're headed to Passover. So, you know, the further Jesus gets with his disciples and he's got people following him, so the closer he gets, more people are going to be following him because they're headed on that same road into Jerusalem. And if you're on that road, you've got to pass in or pass through Jericho to get there. We're introduced to the beggar's name. Now we're told it's Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus. And if you know, if you had a Jewish name in the first century, and it's still true today, you put the word B-A-R in front of the person's name, and it means son of. And that's still true today with Jewish people. They still do that same thing, and throughout time they've used that way of naming people. So Bartimaeus simply means son of Timaeus. And again, it tells us that he was begging. Now, Matthew includes one other thing in the account. So let's go to Matthew 20. And one other thing we'll find there. Matthew chapter 20, verses 29 and 30. Matthew chapter 20, verses 29 and 30. Now, as they went out of Jericho, and so we see again the same thing, and behold, two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, "Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David." Now, we're only told the name of one, and that was Bartimaeus, but there were two blind men there, and we're focusing basically on one, the one that is named. And so we have these, you know, these two blind men. When you put the three accounts together, that all of them included all the information, we have this. We have Jesus and his disciples. There's a multitude all headed to Jerusalem for the feast. They go through, you might say, one part of Jericho, headed out through the other part, and there's these two blind men, only one of whom we know their name, and that's Bartimaeus. But they're both blind and they're both begging. So again, we see how destitute they are. So that's kind of the background to what's happening. And so, if we go back to Luke's account, there in Luke 18, verse 38, and the other two accounts said the same thing. He cried out, saying, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David, have mercy on me." And one of the other accounts, I don't remember if it's Matthew or Mark, includes the word "Lord." "Lord Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Have mercy on us." This was, the Son of David was the most popular reference to the Messiah. I mean, if you were Jewish, as these men obviously were, they were using the most often used designation for who the Messiah was, Son of David, because all the old prophecies, we'll look at just one, said that the Messiah was going to come through David. In other words, he was going to be a descendant of David. Let's go back to Ezekiel chapter 37. Ezekiel chapter 37, read a couple of verses there. Ezekiel chapter 37, and we'll begin in verse 24. Or maybe I'll have somebody read that. Ezekiel 37, verses 24 and 25. Someone would read that. Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 24 and 25.
"David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they shall have one shepherd, and they shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. And they shall dwell in the land that I have given to Jacob, my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they shall dwell therein even they, and their children and their children's children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever."
Okay, there he's talking about, of course, if you read all of Ezekiel 37, talking about what David, not the literal physical David, because he had been dead for a long, long time when Ezekiel 37 is written, but the descendant of David. David had been promised, you know, that the Messiah would come through him and that there would be a king that come through him that would have an eternal kingdom and all of this. And so Ezekiel prophesies here about that and that where they would dwell, They will dwell in the land that I've given to Jacob, my servant. He talks about their children, their children's children, and so forth. And my servant David shall be their prince, shall be their king, shall be their ruler forever. And he goes on and says, I'll make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them. I will establish them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forevermore. Very detailed prophecy about the coming of the Messiah, that he would come through David, come through Jacob, or in that, not come through Jacob, live in that land where Jacob dwelt, and that he would be a prince, a ruler, forever. And of course, the Jews had been looking for a Messiah, and they knew these prophecies that come through David. Yes, see ya. Yeah, I think so. I think the blind men could. I think they could see more than the ones that had been with him and around him a long time had. Very true. I'm sorry, I've got to get something for my throat. It is just really...
Hey, it's your fault about Wednesday. My voice at school went away. You know, it said Sunday that it went, and I said it was last talking to the kids all went from mouth and it wasn't found.
Oh. If I didn't have to get on my kids so much in school, I'd have a throat that was left.
Honestly, I told somebody, one of the coaches there, well, we've gone all summer before we haven't had every hour to do the talking every day, and now we are, and it does distract.
Oh, yeah. It does. Because you can't be silent during those periods anyway. So we see these... making that point that C.L. said about these beggars, these blind beggars, really could see a whole lot more.
They specified more than what it says that
they were revealed, absolutely. Absolutely. and all of course, all of these people had known the prophecies because they had been taught them all their lives, these Jewish people, about like those prophecies in Ezekiel 37 or the ones in Isaiah 53 and all the others, Isaiah 7, about all these prophecies about the Messiah and where he'd be born and how and he would be a descendant of David and all this. So they had known this, and it was obvious that some people, few of them, picked up more than the majority. The majority didn't pick up on it at all. But these blind men, these beggars, did. And so, they said, Jesus, you know, have mercy on us. You know, they were destitute, and they were blind. And again, they were just in terrible shape. So they asked for mercy. They at least understood enough about Jesus to know that he could extend mercy. So that's what they were asking for. They were asking for mercy. But notice what happens right after they cry out or shout, you know, have mercy. Notice what some people in the crowd do. Verse 39. Then those who went before warned him that he should be quiet. But he cried out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me.
And yes.
Yep.
Yeah. That kind of shows us that the blind man begging here wasn't talked too highly of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't bother him. We need him more than you do. You just continue being an old blind beggar. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there might have been some other agendas that some of them in the crowd, because you You know, there were probably lots of people in the multitude of different stripes, you might say. So they might have had all kinds of agendas for why they were telling him to, you know, be quiet. Some might have just didn't want him to bother Jesus, period. Others might not have wanted anybody to be saying, you know, Son of David, have mercy on us. And who knows what some of the other reasons were. But, I mean, that's a real good point. Here's somebody that needed Jesus' mercy desperately. So Jesus stood still and commanded him to be brought to him. And when he had come near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And of course, Jesus knew exactly what the beggar wanted. So the beggar replied, "Lord, that I may receive my sight." I think it's interesting, before we go any further, that, you know, Jesus was not concerned about status, was he? Class status, social status. I mean, he would spend time with a rich young ruler. He would spend time with a blind beggar. He wasn't concerned in those outward trappings like sometimes we get involved in. He was, you know, he was concerned about that, the person on the inside, I guess you'd say. And I think that's a great lesson. We need to be real careful, you know, like James talks about in the first part of his epistle about, you know, when these two men come into the assembly, you know, one's got rich robes on and rings, and you treat him real nice, and you take him and set him up front, and then this old poor guy comes in, and you say, "Well, you just sit here at my footstool, or just out of the way." Mark 10 and verses 46 through 52.
Okay, verse 50. "And he, casting away his garment, rose again, and made his coat to stir in, ragged and filthy, and he was a suitable and citizen to be speaking of the Lord Jesus."
There you go.
Yep,
exactly. But Jesus, you know, like we said, he wasn't concerned about what those outward clothes was like. He was concerned about what was on the inside. And that is a tremendous lesson. And we learn it from Jesus, straight from the Son of God himself, about not letting those outward appearances influence us. Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bartimaeus, right.
And so that may be why, you know, this one may have been the spokesman and they knew his name, and that's maybe why, but it's right here, it just says there was one.
Yep. Could have been.
They were saved here one day, but.
Yeah, could have. Could have been.
One of them may have been the only one that actually responded and came over.
Good point. And it was mentioned already, you know, he takes that garment off, you know, casts it aside. And that may have been about, that may have been most of what he owned was that outer garment. He may not have had much else. You know, blind beggar like that probably didn't have much. But I tell you what, he was wanting to get rid of that. So he, like was mentioned, he cast it aside. Jesus tells him, Luke's account says, "Receive your sight. Your faith has made you well." And then one of the others said, what was the one we read in Mark? Let's go back and read that again. Mark 10, 50, what was it? 49, he tells the blind man, "Be of good cheer, rise, he is calling you." Well, that's what the people told the blind man. The blind man threw his garment aside, came to Jesus, and he says, And verse 52, go your way, your faith has made you well. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus on the road. Okay. Matthew says both of them did. Let's go back and read Matthew, what did I say, 20? Oh, yes. Verse 33. They said to him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes. And immediately their eyes received sight and they followed him. You know, you really see that part of Jesus come out. You know, they say, have mercy on us. And then it follows, well, Jesus, have mercy, or have mercy on us. And Jesus responds with compassion. It's a great account about you see the insight that Jesus has, and you see the multitudes, you know, what they did. Yes, yeah.
And how many other crazy people that he has healed did actually say that they turned and followed him? There's been on one or two, and I think if Fraser and Fraser made the will, their faith is what separates him from this crowd that didn't want him to follow him. They're following because of faith and wanting to.
Right. Yeah, big difference, isn't there? Absolutely.
People will follow something sometimes just because it's the thing to do, or everybody else is doing it, or because they want to see the next show that's going to happen.
Right.
And
very true.
Other people follow because they know the person can do it, whether they do anything else or not.
I think it's pretty neat that in Luke's account at the end it says, he received his sight and followed him, glorifying God. See, he was giving God all the glory for what had happened, and what had happened was bringing glory to God. So I think that's a very interesting point as well. Ended up, people were praising God for what had happened, and we just really get some insight into Jesus and why he came, and it's a great account. All right, anything else about that account before we go on to the next one? We won't finish the next one, but anything else? Okay, this next account we've learned since we were little. It's about the man in the tree named Zacchaeus. Luke 18, verse 19, or Luke 19, verse 1. Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. And remember the idea of kind of the two parts of Jericho. He'd gone through one and left it. Now he had entered the second part of Jericho and was going through it. And this is what happens. Verse 2. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. There's our chief main character. We learn a little about him. He was not just a tax collector, he was one of the main tax collectors, like over an area, a group. And of course, these people were totally hated and despised by the Jewish people, because not only did they work for the Roman government, which they didn't like, many of them, not Zacchaeus, but many of them were crooked and dishonest. So it was kind of a double whammy on most of them. So Zacchaeus was hated by his own people. So he was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And of course, that's how a lot of them made their money, being able to keep part of it. And some kept more than they were allowed to, and that's why they were despised also. So that's Zacchaeus. And here's what he wanted to do. He sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. Well, that was his obstacle he had to overcome. He wasn't very tall. But he wanted to see Jesus badly enough that he was going to not allow that obstacle to get in his way. And of course, for us, we could have all kinds of obstacles. Almost everybody has some type of obstacle that keeps them from seeing Jesus, keep them from going to Jesus. Most people allow the obstacle to stop them, and they won't go past the obstacle. That obstacle might be the faith that they were raised in or the religion they were raised in. Obstacle might be parents or grandparents. Obstacle might be their work. Obstacle might be friends, or it could be all kinds of things. Popularity, position. So, you know, Zacchaeus certainly wouldn't have been popular, but he had a position that had made him, you know, a rich man, wealthy man. And so his obstacle was simply he was short. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. That's how he overcame the obstacle. He couldn't see Jesus if he stood on the ground. So he was going to have to go to another point, some other place, state, to be able to see Jesus, to see past the crowd. And that's, a lesson for people today. You know, if they're going to see Jesus, sometimes they're going to have to do those type of things. I don't mean climb a physical tree, but to get over those obstacles, they're going to have to find a way to do that. They're going to have to want to see Jesus more than any of those other things. He wanted to see Jesus so bad that he wasn't going to allow the fact that he was short to keep that from happening. And people today, if they want to see Jesus bad enough, they will not allow the parents or traditions or work or anything else to keep them from seeing Jesus. So that's what he does, climbs up in a tree. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, "Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house." So he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. So he, of course, Jesus knew he was there. It wasn't that he just happened to look up and see him, but he knew he was there, and tells him, "Okay, you need to come down, because the fact that you've not let this obstacle get in your way means that I'm going to come down and I'm going to be in your house." So not only did Zacchaeus get to see Jesus, he actually gets to be with him personally. But when they saw it, they all complained. That never happens, does it? That's pretty rare. They all complained, saying, "He's gone to be a guest with a man who's a sinner." And the idea was, amongst the Jews, that all tax collectors were sinners. I mean, they had to be sinners, every one of them. There's no way you could be a tax collector in most of the Jewish people's minds and not be a sinner. That was just a given, they thought. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I've taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold." Now that's an honest guy. If he finds out he's taken anything that he shouldn't have in some way, he said, "I not only restore it," he says, "I restore it four times." Yes. Right.
And, I mean, they may have been told, well, you know, you've got that for 5% or whatever, and some of them might have been back to 10, 15, and 20%. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But apparently, this man collected what the Romans said and the amount that they said he should get for himself. And he is rich, because, again, the taxes are regularly coming in, so he has regular income, where other people, like the
right.
people waiting in the marketplace waiting for someone to come and hire them, they didn't have regular jobs.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There's certainly, by looking at this account, he was an honest tax collector, a very honest tax collector. So he said, "That's what I do." So Jesus responds, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost." And there in one verse is the mission of Jesus stated. Comes to seek and save that which was lost. He did not come for political reasons. He did not come for financial reasons. He didn't come to make his people wealthy on earth. He didn't come to make them have these earthly positions. He didn't come to set up an earthly kingdom or to be an earthly king or to build an earthly tabernacle. He says, I came to seek and save that which was lost. That was my mission. Not any of those other things at all.